Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, they are the most popular vehicles on the road today. Motor Trend reveals its pick for 2025 SUV of the year. Also this morning, the EPA wants every community in the country to remove all existing lead pipes from public water systems within the next decade. It's a potential danger that's been known for years, but is that timeline realistic? In our high school football preview, the Trojans have a chance to end the regular season on a high note tonight and build some momentum heading into the playoffs. And we have another collection of easy and delicious recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, October 25th, 2024. Trick-or-treat is this weekend, in case your kids didn't get enough candy from the Halloween parade, or if you skipped it, knowing that trick-or-treat was coming up. So trick-or-treat in Findlay is this weekend. A health expert, the director of the Healthy Lifestyle Clinic and Pediatric Obesity Program, Joan Hahn, is offering tips to limit sugar intake in children for Halloween and the days immediately following. Dr. Hahn recommends having a healthy dinner before trick-or-treating so that kids are full before going out getting that sugar rush. So that's actually not a bad idea. Just have dinner before trick-or-treat. She also recommends waiting until the last minute to buy your Halloween candy that you'll be handing out to all of the beggars so that it is not hanging around the house and tempting you and your kids. So wait until the last minute to buy the candy. And, of course, donating some candy because you know the kids are going to get more than they can possibly eat. So you can donate it so that other kids can get a sugar high like yours. Because why should your kids ruin all the fun for others? So donate candy. She says, don't deny children candy. The worst thing you can do is to say no candy because the more you say no, the more they're going to want it, and then they'll hide it, and you won't be able to monitor it at all. So be careful making it, restricting it too much, is what she says. So, by the way, speaking of Halloween candy, this is something that's important to know, I suppose. Gastroenterologist Christopher Dahman says too much Halloween candy can cause an upset stomach. Easy for me to say early in the morning. Too much candy can cause an upset stomach, but some sweets are better for your gut microbiome than others. Halloween candy can disrupt, he says, Halloween candy can disrupt the trillions of microorganisms in your belly, and sugar can impair your gut's ability to digest food. Sugar-coated nuts and candy apples are slightly better for your stomach, as they will also contain fiber. So, yes, sugar, but they will contain fiber. Dark chocolate with at least 80% cocoa may encourage helpful bacteria to grow. So, dark chocolate. The worst offenders in terms of disrupting your gut health: chewy candies, sugar-laden confections mostly made of high fructose corn syrup, saturated fat, and additives. They can increase the unsavory bacterial species in your gut and lead to inflammation, making them one of the least healthy Halloween choices. And dentists will say beware of the chewy candies as well, because they will stick to your kids' teeth and cause tooth decay and accelerate all of that. So chewy candies generally probably should be avoided for Halloween. So it's the doctor saying it there. Couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of eating things that we shouldn't, if you own a dog, how many times have you had to stop your pooch from eating something weird? According to a new survey of 2,000 pet parents, dog owners on average have to stop They're fur babies. When did we start calling dogs fur babies? I hate that term. It just grates on me. I don't know why. But anyway, dog owners have to stop their pets from eating something weird every 3 days on average, according to the survey. Respondents to the survey say that their dogs have tried to eat tampons, wall spackle, a winning lottery ticket. You don't want that. And the television remote control. It's one thing to eat a lottery ticket or wall spackle, but you mess with my remote control and now the dog is in trouble. Christmas ornaments. That was the other thing. And we're coming up on that time of the year. And I have to admit, my dog has tried that. The dog will walk by the Christmas tree, wag her tail, and knock the ornaments off the lower branches of the tree. And then after she's knocked the ornaments off, she's curious and will... I don't know if she's ever actually tried to eat an ornament, but she's actually picked one up and carried it off before. We use plastic ornaments on our tree. Very few glass ornaments for that reason. So that's... can relate. 59% of dog owners worry that they don't always notice when their pets get into something. 21% have never read the nutritional label on their dog's food. There was David Letterman had the joke one time. Hey, my dog spends his day drinking out of the toilet bowl. I don't think I'm worried about the nutritional value of the of the food. That's a good point. So anyway, just kind of interesting stuff there on the pets. Pet owners. Most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Hey, this is kind of interesting, and kudos to Columbus, Ohio. Apparently, it is the top American city for commuters. Visual Capitalist found, they looked at Lyft data from over 1,400 people and found that they that Columbus, Ohio is at the top of the list of the best cities for commuters. They took into account factors like speed of the commute, least amount of time sitting in traffic, cost of the commute, and downtown vibrancy. So those were the factors: speed, cost, and downtown vibrancy. Columbus at the top of the list thanks to short commute times and low parking costs. So El Paso, Texas, and Las Vegas, Nevada take second and third place, although one of the cheapest cities to be a commuter, Albuquerque, New Mexico. But Columbus, Ohio, top of the list. So pretty cool. And speaking of commuting and working and all of that, what is it we've always been told? And this is something you may want to think about as you get up and get ready for work this morning. What is it we've always been told? If you get up early, work hard, put the nose to the grindstone, all of that, you're going to get ahead, right? That's the secret to being successful and having a long and prosperous career, making lots of money, all of that. Well, apparently not. A new study out of Norway found that the timing of certain life events, most notably having a child or the death of a parent, is linked to wealth. The timing of when these things happen is linked to your overall wealth. They studied 48,000 people. So this is not a small sample size. 48,000 people were studied, and researchers found that those who had children later in life or didn't have children at all tended to accumulate more wealth. And that's not a surprise. I mean, if you don't have kids, it costs a lot of money to have kids. And so if you don't have them, you will generate more wealth. There's no question about that. You'll accumulate more wealth, I should say. If you have children later in life, you're probably better positioned to afford the expense of having kids. Same deal. But what I thought was really interesting, those whose parents died later in life also tended to generate more wealth. So if your parents die when you're young, you're not going to be as wealthy as if they live longer into your lifetime. And I'm thinking probably because you have more years of borrowing from your parents. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Interestingly, childless individuals started with low wealth positions at age 40, but showed strong increases through their 50s. So something to think about this morning as you get up, get ready for work and head out the door. It's not how hard you work. It's whether you have kids and how long your parents live, as it turns out, according to this research. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, mostly cloudy today, a high in the low 60s, partly cloudy tonight, a low in the lower 40s. Construction of the new roundabout near US 68 and State Route 15 on the south side of Findlay is nearing completion. The Ohio Department of Transportation says the roundabout is expected to open on Friday, November 1st. ODOT's Sherry Newton on the effectiveness of roundabouts.
Roundabouts are proven. They improve intersection safety and improve congestion. They can handle a lot of traffic efficiently and do so while reducing crash severity and crash numbers.
She says this project was needed because Township Roads 49 and 77, which provided access to US 68, are being removed as part of the Eagle Creek Floodwater Storage Basin project. Get more on this new roundabout in this story on our website. Findlay's Trick or Treat is on Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m., so make sure you keep an eye out for little princesses and superheroes out and about in search of candy. The Trick or Treat dates for a few other communities include Arlington and Bluffton on Halloween on Thursday, October 31st. Get more in this story on our website. A handful of people were indicted by the Ohio Attorney General's office for illegally voting, including a man who has since died.
Six legal immigrants were indicted for illegal voting by Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost. One of the people accused is Ramesh Patel, a 68-year-old man from North Royalton near Cleveland. The problem is, Patel died in December of 2022, and that clearly prevents him from facing charges. Cuyahoga County Prosecutor Michael O'Malley called Yost's actions, quote, one of the greatest examples of prosecutorial overreach ever witnessed, end quote. No mention of Patel being dead was mentioned by Yost.
ONN's Jay Plyburn reporting. If you're up for a different kind of trick-or-treat, Project Hope's annual Trick-or-Treat on Horseback fundraiser is happening this weekend. It'll be held on Saturday and Sunday at 6645 Township Road 215 east of Findlay. The Hope and Project Hope stands for Horses Opening People's Eyes, and the organization is a nonprofit offering equine-assisted therapy. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, of course, as any automotive enthusiast knows, each year Motor Trend selects one new car, truck, and SUV to receive the prestigious title of Best in its category, and they kicked off the trio of awards for 2025 this week by naming the SUV of the Year. Motor Trend head of editorial Ed Lowe is with us this morning, and Ed, I'll let you do the honors. What is Motor Trend's 2025 SUV of the Year?
So we're proud to announce that Motor Trend's 2025 SUV of the Year is the Lincoln Nautilus.
The Lincoln Nautilus. What makes this vehicle stand out from all of the other finalists?
You know, first off, the styling. If you go to MotorTrend.com and look on the homepage right now, we got a big story up with lots of pictures. You can see the vehicle is just beautiful. It's got this aviation-inspired exterior. But honestly, it's the interior where it's really got it going on. Very luxurious. Two-row, five-passenger luxury SUV. It's absolutely loaded with technology, and it starts up at the front. It's got this 48-inch panoramic screen that's customizable. It sits at the base of the windshield, and it's got all the tech you could ever want. It's called the Lincoln Digital Experience. You got your Google Assistant, your Amazon Alexa. You can even get Siri on board because the system works with both iPhones and Android phones. Loaded with tech, it's got Blue Cruise, which is this semi-autonomous driving system. Mm. And beyond the technology, great efficiency story, because the Nautilus comes in a hybrid version that gets up to 31 miles per gallon on the freeway. And it's a very safe vehicle. So it has the industry's highest safety rating, the IIHS Top Safety Pick Plus, and all of this starting at just $52,000 for the base model. Tremendous value story. But for all of those reasons, the Lincoln Nautilus is Motor Trend's 2025 SUV of the year.
So you're talking about a number of the features that make the Lincoln stand out. I'm curious, from a personal standpoint, you, in addition to being the head of editorial for Motor Trend, are a car lover yourself. What do you personally like best about this vehicle?
So I love how much thought went into putting it all together. You know, we test hundreds of vehicles every year at Motor Trend. We've been doing it for 75 years. You know, this thing, though, it's not just about the number of screens and how big they are. It's how thoughtful the Lincoln team went in and kind of programmed them and made sure everything works together. And you can customize at the, you know, you can really just swipe around and move different features to different screens. It's phenomenal. And it's not just the software piece either. The hardware, you know, like the seats are absolutely fantastic. They look gorgeous. There's this optional red Venetian leather with white piping. They look tremendous, but they're really comfortable. And it's not just the front seat. You know, normally that gets they're really nice. The second one is arguably better than the front in terms of the seating comfort. And then the whole thing, the Lincoln team really paid attention to delivering this spa on wheels type experience.
Yeah.
You can get an optional 28-speaker Revell audio system, and there's even aromatherapy on board.
Wow.
So you can come with up to 7 different fragrances. They're called digital scents. So you can make the car smell however you like, and it's absolutely just very comprehensively, you know, built. It's just amazing.
I wonder, is it getting more difficult to come up with a winner each year? I mean, across the board, we are seeing more innovative features, better build quality, more sophisticated engineering. I would have to think that the margins top to bottom in the industry must be incredibly small at this point.
Yeah, very astute observation, especially in the SUV class. There are more SUVs than ever. I mean, we are at kind of peak SUV. There are more, for instance, there were 37 vehicles in contention this year. That's more than there were in our Car of the Year program. And this has been a trend that we've been tracking. So yeah, you're right. Not just super competitive, but to be honest, nobody's really making a lemon these days. It's really hard to find a car that's like just absolutely terrible, because, you know, the brands, the companies that can't exist if they build like really, really terrible products.
So, right.
Totally right. Which makes our winners even harder to pick and even more, I think, you know, important that and those that we call out.
And to that end, I mean, all kudos, of course, to the Lincoln Nautilus, but you really can't go wrong with any of the finalists. I mean, they are all pretty impressive in their own right.
That's right. And they're, you know, they're all strong for different reasons. It's why we have the criteria. You know, we don't compare the vehicles directly against each other, because that would be kind of ridiculous. You have a luxury SUV over here and a economy SUV over here.
Right.
So we compare it against our Award 6 criteria, and it's the one that checks all the boxes that ends up winning. The others, they can be really strong in some areas, but maybe they're weaker in some of the other ones.
So when we talk about these trends, and you mentioned many of them that you find on the Nautilus and some of them that you see in other vehicles as well, what are the emerging trends overall as we head into 2025, whether someone is in the market for the SUV of the year or really any new vehicle? What are the trends that buyers should keep an eye on heading into the upcoming year?
So, of course, everybody's talking about EVs, and the question is, you know, are sales up? Are they down? And should I consider one? And a lot of manufacturers are pivoting back to hybrids. And there's one specific kind of hybrid that's going to come back in a big way, and it's called EREV. So these are electric range extended vehicles, and they're fundamentally electric vehicles, so electric cars. They have a motor, they have a battery, and they run on pure electric power. But they also have an onboard generator, a small gas engine that helps give you the best of both worlds. So you get the range, you get the smoothness, you get the quietness of driving an EV, and if you can charge at home, then you might never have to put gas in it.
Yeah.
But then if you want to go on a long trip, if you want to tow something, you have the convenience of filling up the gas engine, the fuel, as convenient as it is to go to a gas station, and that extends the range and makes it all that more convenient. So it's really the best of both worlds. These EREVs, there are going to be trucks and SUVs coming in 2025. So if you're curious about it, go seek those out.
And by the way, just to clarify, the Lincoln Nautilus is not that, right?
It's a hybrid. It is not specifically an EREV.
Okay.
EREV would mean it's it runs completely on battery, and it's right. got a way to plug it in.
Yep. Yeah. Again, the 2025 SUV of the year is the Lincoln Nautilus. And as we mentioned, car and truck of the year announcements are now on the horizon. Those are the next ones up. Any sneak peek you can give us of what's to come?
So I wish I could tell you the winner, but I can't. We're going to announce car of the year in November, and then we'll do truck of the year in about mid-December. But I will tell you that they're both very competitive programs, but truck in particular, absolutely bananas this year. We had all the big names from Tesla Cybertruck to the Ford Ranger, Toyota Tacoma, Ram 1500, Chevy Silverado EV. You know, trucks are hugely popular yeah. in America, so this is one to watch out for. And we're going to announce, of course, and run the story on MotorTrend.com, which is where you can also find all the details on our 2025 SUV of the year, the Lincoln Nautilus.
And as we were saying with the SUV, I would imagine really, really difficult decisions to make because they're all such terrific vehicles. Again, Motor Trend head of editorial Ed Lowe with us this morning with the 2025 SUV of the year, the Lincoln Nautilus. Ed, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Most of us take it for granted that our drinking water is safe, right? I mean, this is the United States of America, not some third world country. Of course we have safe drinking water. Well, in many places, aging water systems with lead pipes do pose significant health hazards. This week, time to correspond with Lead Poisoning Prevention Week, the EPA issued a final rule requiring public drinking water systems across the country to identify and replace lead pipes, all lead pipes, within 10 years, and allocating $2.6 billion in drinking water infrastructure funding to accomplish that goal. With us this morning are Chad Seidel, an environmental consultant and research affiliate, the University of Colorado, and Dan Tedesco, who heads the Community Water Systems Division for BRITA. And Chad, let me start with you here. What do people need to know about the nation's water supply? How concerned should we be that our drinking water is unsafe, or at least not as safe as maybe we think it is?
Well, we've had some historical practices to use lead materials, most importantly, the service line that connects the pipe in the street to your home or building can be made of lead. And that lead line can lead to lead in the drinking water at your tap, and lead is a concern for public health. And so we recently conducted research to help identify which water systems would most likely be impacted from that, comparing those estimates with US EPA's, and then also looked into the benefits of implementing point-of-use filtration in advance of those lead service line replacements and what would come from that. And we found really good benefits from implementing those sooner than later because point-of-use filtration can mitigate lead before those lead pipes are removed. It can help everybody get the same public health protection, whether they're the first house to have their lead pipe removed or the last.
We're going to ask you to kind of expand on some of that research that you did on this topic. What do you find? How prevalent is this?
Well, like I said, the estimates are approximately 9 million lead service lines across the U.S. It's more so found in your part of the country, in the Northeast in particular, because of places where development happened, where the use of lead pipes was more prevalent. You know, early 1900s, 1930s, stopped more so at the 1940s. There was a national ban in the 1980s. So anything built since then doesn't have the same degree of concern. But there's a lot of places that still have a lot of lead pipes in the ground, and it's taking time to find them and then to schedule the replacements and the literal working in the trenches to remove them and put in new lead-free alternatives.
And certainly it is not an inexpensive proposition to remove all of the lead pipes, so this is something that's going to take time. So, Dan, let me bring you into the conversation here. How does this lead contamination in these water systems affect consumers of the water that comes through those systems?
Chris, as we mark National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week, it's important for everyone to understand that no amount of lead is safe. Unfortunately, it's harmful to everyone. It's particularly dangerous lead exposure for young children, infants, and unborn babies, as well as elderly. And the impacts are numerous, from developmental delays, reduced IQ, other long-term impacts like high blood pressure and kidney damage. And so as we work as a country, as communities, to replace all those lead service lines and, you know, implement that final solution to reduce lead exposure as much as possible, it's really important that we think about what we can do now to mitigate lead exposure and use things like point-of-use pitcher filters that can mitigate lead risk as much as possible.
Which, obviously, people are familiar with your company, with Brita, for their point-of-use solutions, as you call it. How effective are those solutions at mitigating the dangers here?
So the good news is they are very effective at mitigating lead exposure. Our Brita Elite filter is certified to reduce 99% of lead and is certified by third parties that look at all solutions for that potential benefit. They're affordable. We work with over 200 communities today, many of which are in Ohio and around the Great Lakes, to implement those solutions as part of a comprehensive set of tools that communities use to address this problem and make sure that folks have as least lead exposure as possible while they wait for these permanent fixes.
So, Chad, correct me if I'm wrong here. Maybe I don't have all of the details right, but my understanding is that municipal water systems have to issue annual reports on contaminants in their water supply. Is this something that will show up in those reports, whether there are abnormally high levels of lead, if there's a concern in our own community?
Yeah, you're right. The water systems have to issue what's called a consumer confidence report every year, and they're also made available on their websites. That is the best source to get your information about the concentrations of lead that they monitor in there, in the water served to you. But there's also a couple of other key parts. Water systems, as of just the last couple of weeks ago, had to implement and provide to the state regulators and ultimately the EPA what's called their initial lead service line inventory. And customers that have been identified to either have lead or not yet informed if they have lead or not are required to receive a notification letter telling them if your address either has lead or has not yet been answered if it has. So that is a good way to get information. And then most water utilities are really proactive and collaborative with their customers and can help communicate that directly with you, and in some cases also support taking samples and analyzing them to inform that specifically in your home.
As you mentioned, this is a rather complex fix for this, to replace all of the water pipes and lines that need to be replaced, and again, at no small expense. Is there a timetable for fixing and replacing all of these lead pipes within the nation's municipal water system? I mean, we're talking about more than just our community. We're talking about all across the country here.
Yeah, there is. And because of the diversity of systems across the U.S., some have no lead pipes, and it's hard to figure out if they do or don't. And some have lots, and they know that they're there. EPA just finalized the new regulation called the Lead and Copper Rule Improvements that requires water systems to identify and replace those lead pipes within the next 10 years. So a lot of work to be done. Water utility staff literally getting into the trenches to find and replace those pipes. And then in the meantime, everybody can be a part of proactively utilizing point-of-use filtration to achieve public health benefits. Again, whether they're the first or last house to have that lead service line replaced.
So, Dan, what should people then do? They're concerned about this. Maybe we know that this is impacting us, or we are concerned about it. Where can we get more information here?
So, as Chad mentioned, right now, utilities around the country, many of which in Ohio, are sending out notifications to residents directly if they are impacted by a lead service line, if they have one, or if they have an unknown lead service line material. So make sure you're checking your mail. If you get a notification, read it, follow the steps that your utility is recommending. If you're unsure if you got one or can't remember if you saw it in the mail, reach out to your local utility via their website or give them a call. They can often send you testing materials, let you know what to look for to figure out if you have a lead service line or not. If you're just generally worried about this issue and you're hearing it from your community members or friends or family, Think about what you can do in your home right now to help keep yourself and your family safe. As I mentioned, the Brita leaf filter can reduce lead up to 99%. We work with over 200 communities today on making sure that residents have access to that tool. And we're hopeful that we can continue to provide residents the Brita leaf filter as they look for solutions to mitigate lead exposure while these long-term solutions are being worked on.
Once again, Chad Seidel is an environmental consultant, research affiliate at the University of Colorado, and Dan Tedesco heads the Community Water Systems Division for Brita. Gentlemen, thank you both for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Your football Friday night forecast. Rain should be well out of here by game time. We're looking at about 62 degrees at kickoff, upper 50s to halftime, mid 50s by the end of the game. We have really been blessed with some terrific weather this football season. The Trojans, of course, entered the season with high hopes, and while things have not really played out in their favor, they do have the chance to end the regular campaign on a high note tonight and build some momentum heading into the playoffs. On this week's Coach's Corner, John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephan Adams.
Last week was less than you'd hoped for. Yeah. 37-6 loss to Whitmer. Landon Eckelberry, Ryan Korkos both saw time under center.
Yeah.
Was that planned with the freshman coming off the injury the previous week?
We felt things were kind of out of our hands a little bit and just wanted to make sure we protect Landon and also get Riley that experience as well, too. So it wasn't in our cards that night and got a chance to go in and get some valuable experience. And he's been a big hat off to Riley because he's been in this situation a couple of times where he's had to come in and do what he's done. And those are the kind of kids that we went around, right? Like, be patient, wait your turn. Your opportunity comes, take advantage of it, get better. And he's been an ultimate program kid for us this year. I'm really proud of him for that on that aspect.
This week is a road game Friday night against Sylvania Northview. In 9 games this season, they've been shut out in 8 of them. No game is ever a lock. So what is the message to the team as you get ready for Week 10?
Well, I think just kind of going back and looking in the mirror a little bit about last week, maybe these obviously games are not going our way, of course. But at the same time, being able to realize that, starts with me and ends with me as far as, the product that we've put out there the last couple of weeks hasn't been or looked the way that we know we're capable of playing. And some of the things that we saw grow through last year to this year, obviously injuries and adversity have kind of hit, but we still feel pretty confident about the kids in our room. So I have to do a better job of getting those guys ready to go. So we came back this week and we really, really focused on getting back to some basic fundamentals of just making sure that we are looking at what we're doing. Is it sound? Is it technically right? Are we putting kids in the right positions to be successful? And then also just kind of respecting the game, right? I think it's very easy when things aren't going your way to point the fingers, to cast blame. I told everybody, put it on me. Okay, don't put it on the kids. Don't put it on my coaches. I'm standing in front of it. Put it on me. I can handle it. I'm fine with it. I sleep okay at night. but I know that we can go back to the drawing board and figure things out. So it's really been about respecting the process. Every day you have an opportunity to get better. I told the guys, we owe it to our community. We owe it to our former players to go out there and put a good product out there. I owe it to them to go out and do everything that I need to do as a head coach to make sure that we're respecting the game, respecting the process, and we can perform at a high level on Friday night.
Even a team that's struggling like that has something to play for in their last game of the season. It's their seniors' last game, their last home game. Does the nothing-to-lose situation for them concern you at all?
It always does. There's every single Friday night, everybody's putting on pads the same way. If we decide that we want to come out flat or we come out flat like we did in last week, that's going to show, right? Especially for a team that has nothing to lose. They want to spoil it for us, right? They're not coming here saying, hey, we're going to lose to Findlay. They want to make it worse for us. And they can be a little more risky with certain things and play a little more loose and play a little more free. Yeah, you definitely have to worry about that. But that goes back to just intent. What are we here to get better for? How do we go out and execute? And I think our kids have done a good job so far this week.
Trojans head coach Stephan Adams with John Marshall on the Coach's Corner earlier this week. It's Findlay at Northview tonight. Our coverage begins at 6:10 with tonight in high school football on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. Elsewhere across our family of stations, other action this evening in the BBC. Van Buren is at Liberty Benton in Week 10. That one on our sister station, 100.5 WK. WKXA and at WKXA.com. And over on 106.3 The Fox, Ottawa Glendorf wraps up the regular campaign at Defiance tonight. And that also on 106.3TheFox.com. You can follow all of the area action, your favorite teams, on the WFIN scoreboard page. Continuously live updates, live continuous updates is what I mean to say, on the WFIN scoreboard page, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College, WFIN.com/scoreboard. We also have a link at our webpage at goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Texas woman is likely going to prison for a long, long time for smuggling the eggs of rare chickens. Of all the reasons to go to prison, smuggling the eggs of rare chickens. So here's the story. They were being hatched at Jennifer Mayo's home near Corpus Christi. Investigators found multiple Dong Tao chickens on the property. They are often called dragon chickens and are prized in places like Vietnam. But here's the problem. It is illegal to import poultry from regions affected by the bird flu. So she is now in trouble with the law, in big trouble. She faces, Ms. Mayo does, up to 2 decades behind bars when she is sentenced in January. Of all of the things to get a 20-year prison sentence for, smuggling the eggs of rare chickens. Wow. Can you imagine? It said, I have no idea whether she'll be sentenced to the max, but end up in prison. What are you in for? I was smuggling in rare chickens. Maybe at least when she gets to prison, she'll be assigned to the cafeteria. You know, it's speaking of unusual things, this smuggling eggs, that's weird. This is also kind of weird. In Ontario, Canada, golf courses have been reporting disappearing golf carts, and officials believed that they were being sold on the black market. Black market hot golf carts in Ontario, Canada. Well, again, it's Canada. They do things a little weird. We have automobile fencing operations in this country. They have fenced golf carts in Canada. On Wednesday, police in the city of York announced 4 people have been arrested in connection with this golf cart theft ring. During one raid in mid-October, officials found 18 golf carts, along with some rare Pokemon trading cards. So, just as kind of a bonus. GPS tracking helped police find some of the stolen merchandise. And despite the recent arrests, officials believe that even more individuals involved in the ring are still out there. More people are involved, so stay tuned. All right, then. Again, here's another unusual theft. And we have a lot of unusual thefts in the broken news. This from North Carolina, where Thomas Rice had his truck stolen, which that's not so unusual. But what was inside the truck was his father's ashes. Mr. Rice's 2016 Ford F-150 was reportedly taken on Sunday morning while he was in the process of transporting the remains from Syracuse, New York. The car was abandoned a mile away from where it was taken, and fortunately, the ashes were safely inside. I wonder if the thieves abandoned the truck once they found the ashes and they were creeped out by that. It was enough for them to say, we'll just leave it here. Mr. Rice's family will have a ceremony for the deceased 92-year-old next month. And he said, we've got some pretty interesting stuff for his eulogy. Mr. Rice kind of joked that he did a lot of fantastic things, had a lot of incredible adventures during his life. And even after he passed away, he had one more adventure in store. Well, good to see that they recovered his ashes and all is well with the world, and his truck, too. But I'm sure the ashes were the big thing for him. Let's see. Another one from the international file of the broken news here. A farmer in Lancashire, England, was arrested after delivering his own special brand of justice. Here's the story. Leland Hornby and a friend were riding his electric bike across this farmer's field there in Lancashire one night. But then they found that the gate to the property was locked as they tried to leave. So they were able to hop the fence, but they had to leave the electric bike behind. They came back the next morning to try and retrieve the bike, but it was gone. And so they set out to search the property for the missing bike. And that's when the farmer, 52-year-old Neil Greenwood, allegedly jumped on his ATV, chased the guys down, and hogtied them. He then tossed the two young men on his quad and drove them to the police station. Security video obtained by local news reporters shows the ATV speeding through the streets with the two friends precariously balanced on the front and the back. Which must have been quite a sight in and of itself. A police spokesman, though, says that Mr. Greenwood originally called the police about the incident, but before they could respond, he decided to take matters into his own hands and deliver the trespassers to the police station himself. And that's when things took a turn. It was Mr. Greenwood who ended up behind bars on suspicion of false imprisonment and assault. That's how you know that this story took place in England and not someplace like Texas. If it were in Texas, they'd be fine with it. But in England, you can't hogtie trespassers and transport them hanging on for dear life on your ATV to the police station. This were in Texas, no problem. In England, that's a problem. Mr. Greenwood, the farmer, is free on bail pending further investigation. So, and finally, in the broken news this morning, Eric Smith surprised everyone at Alfredo's Pizza Cafe in Scranton, Pennsylvania, some time back when he left his waitress a $3,000 tip for a $13 bill. And if that sounds too good to be true, it's because it turned out it was. Mr. Smith's generosity was apparently inspired by a viral trend started some years ago called Tips for Jesus, which encourages people to leave life-changing tips for servers in the name of spreading kindness. So, it's a wonderful thing to do. But, there's a twist. 3 months later, Alfredo's received a letter from Mr. Smith's bank saying he was disputing the charge. The restaurant tried reaching out to Mr. Smith to see if there was some misunderstanding, but when they got no response, that left them with only one option: to take legal action. They are actually now suing him for reneging on the tip. The case remains unsolved. We will follow up. It's a wonderful thing to do, but then to turn around and dispute the charge, come on, man. There you go. That is today's... How low can you go to you know, get somebody's hopes up like that, this waitress with a $3,000 tip, and then turn around and dispute the charge. That's terrible. That's just terrible. That's not what Jesus would do. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
And yet another major brand just announced it's halting all social media advertising.
The two most overused and abused words in advertising are truth and trust. They are the two most precious commodities for all brands, big and small. As an advertiser, you have to trust your partners to protect your brand's truth using the media consumers trust. Radio, it's on.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Do you experience the Sunday scaries? This is a survey of 2,000 Americans finds that the average worker feels anxious about the upcoming work week 36 times a year. So much more often than not, we feel anxious about the upcoming work week on Sunday. Specifically, the dread starts to set in around 3:54 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. They call it the Sunday scaries. And 23% of those in the survey say that Sunday is harder to enjoy because of the dread of the looming work week. So how do we deal with these Sunday scaries? What do we do to kind of put our minds at ease? Well, the top activities are binge watching TV shows, sleeping in, cooking, and going for walks. And apparently, we buy things. In a separate survey of 2,000 Americans, commissioned by the financial platform Chime, particularly young people, it seems, will shop to take their mind off of, you know, the work week that's coming up that they are dreading. 17% of Gen Zers shop to get rid of the Monday blues, the Sunday scaries and the Monday blues. And what's interesting is, with respect to shopping, we actually start shopping before the Sunday scaries actually set in, not waiting until Sunday. The most likely time that shoppers will splurge on online purchases, 2:36 in the afternoon on Saturday. Sunday scaries don't set in until just before 4 o'clock Sunday, but we're shopping beginning at 2:36 p.m. on Saturday. Maybe a preemptive strike, apparently. 42% of those in this survey actually said that Saturday is the best shopping day. 41% said Friday is the best. Weekend isn't technically even here yet, and we're already shopping. And I guess it also doesn't stop on Sunday. 63% will admit to browsing products, shopping online during work hours. So anyway, Janelle Salanavi of Chime says it's important to pause and think. It's tempting to make those quick buys, especially when you come across a good deal. But shopping smart means making sure your purchases align with your needs and your budget, not just impulse. And not just because you're trying to avoid the Sunday scaries, certainly. Something to keep in mind as we come up on the weekend, to be sure. Once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio this morning. This is your second appearance this week on the radio.
Yeah, it is.
You're getting to be a regular.
Okay.
Of course,
yes, it is my second time.
Kyra and I emceed and had the play-by-play commentary for the Halloween parade on Tuesday.
That was lots of fun.
What a terrific event that was. And by the way, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, I think, on the program, but the winners, the float winners, have been announced.
Have
and
they?
If you have not If you have not heard what they are, you can go to the Fort Findlay FOP Lodge 20 Facebook page where they have videos of all of the various entrants receiving their awards yesterday.
There were really good ones this
Best
year.
In show was Blanchard Valley Center with their Disney float.
That one was really
that
cool.
That was impressive.
It was impressive.
No question.
That one was really neat.
Anyway, all of the winners are posted on the Fort Findlay FOP Lodge 20 Facebook page. I know we were talking about it yesterday morning, but I wanted to let you know that those are posted now. So, going. But my wife, Kyber, is here not to talk about the parade, but with another collection of yummy and easy-to-make recipes from Kyber's Kitchen. This first one is one we had the other day, and it is perfect for a day like today. A cold, breezy, rainy fall day. Now it's going to clear up. It's going to be a little bit better by the time we get to the football games tonight. But this is a perfect dish. It is a Cheddar Bay Biscuit Chicken Pot Pie.
Yes. So this is 4 cups of chicken, pre-cooked, cut in 2 pieces, 2 cups of celery chopped, 2 cups of red potatoes chopped, 1/4-inch cubes, 1/2 a sweet onion chopped, 3 tablespoons of butter, 1/4 cup of flour, 2 teaspoons of Old Bay seasoning, 1 chicken-flavored bouillon cube, 1 cup of hot water, 1 cup of chicken broth, 1 cup of heavy cream. And then for the Cheddar Bay biscuits, it's a 11.3-ounce box of Cheddar Bay biscuit mix, 3/4 cup of milk, 1/2 cup of shredded cheddar cheese, and 1/4 cup of butter melted, and your biscuit seasoning packet that comes in your box.
Okay.
So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Mix your Cheddar Bay biscuit mix with your milk. Add your cheese until combined. Set that aside. Then in a large iron skillet, melt your butter over medium heat. Add your celery, potatoes, and onions. Cut and cook until soft. About 8 minutes or so. Then sprinkle flour and the Old Bay seasoning over the vegetables and stir that up. Let it cook for just 1 to 2 minutes, kind of get those seasonings going in there.
Okay.
Then add your chicken bouillon broth mixture and your cream. And then simmer until thickened. And it won't take too long. I would say maybe 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
If that. But simmer until thickened, then add your cooked chicken. The chicken that I used, usually I get the rotisserie shredded chicken.
Okay.
They didn't have any, so I bought a seasoned chicken breast strips that were pre-cooked and chopped them up.
Chop those up.
It was,
You could use the Brinkman's canned chicken.
But that doesn't have the flavorings, the seasonings and stuff.
So you would have to season it.
It. Okay. But you could try that. I could believe how good this was. So then add your chicken, drop your biscuit mixture by the spoonful over your chicken mixture, bake for 25 to 30 minutes until the biscuit topping is golden brown. Melt your butter, mix in your seasoning packet, brush that over the biscuits, and then I put mine back in the oven just for a little while, just to kind of, golden brown with that butter.
Okay.
And then enjoy.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yes.
The Cheddar Bay Biscuit Chicken Pot Pie. And that was another one that the next day reheated. It was really good, too.
Yes.
Let's see here. To go along with that, we have a fall fruit salad.
Yes. So this is, your dressing is 1 orange, 2 tablespoons of maple syrup, and 3/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. Fruit salad is a 16-ounce red seedless grapes, 12 ounces of blackberries, 1 cup of chopped pecans, and 2 large sweet apples. So in a large bowl, add your zest, your orange zest and juice of 1 orange. Then add your maple syrup and your cinnamon. Whisk that together until it's combined. Then add your grapes, your blueberries, your pecans. Cube up your apples into bite-sized pieces. Add them to the bowl. Immediately toss the fruit to cook. coat. You can serve this immediately or store in the refrigerator covered until ready to serve.
Okay.
It's best the same day with apples.
Okay.
If you're not going to, if you're going to use this the next day, then don't put the apples in until the next day.
Okay. There you go. Don't want them to get mushy.
Yeah, yeah. And brown.
Really easy fall fruit salad.
Yes.
And then for dessert, have chocolate bread.
Yes.
Chocolate bread. Okay.
So this is a half a cup of unsweetened cocoa powder, 1/3 cup of all-purpose flour, 3/4 cup of granulated sugar, 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder, 3 teaspoons of baking soda, a pinch of salt, 1 cup of buttermilk, 2 eggs, 1/2 cup of vegetable oil, 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 3/4 cup semi-sweet chocolate chips divided, and 1/4 cup of heavy whipping cream. So grease and flour your 9 by 13 inch loaf pan and preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Then a large bowl, whisk together your cocoa, your powder, your flour, your sugar, your baking powder, your baking soda, and your salt. Then add your eggs, your buttermilk, your oil, your vanilla extract, and mix until smooth. Fold in 1/2 cup of your chocolate chips. Pour the batter into the prepared pan. Tap on the counter just to make sure there's like no little holes and it's nice and level.
Okay.
Air holes. Bake for 1 hour until a toothpick insert in the middle comes out clean. Let the bread cool down in the pan for about 10 minutes. Then transfer to a cooking and baking rack just to let that bread completely cool down.
Okay.
Then to make the ganache, you place 1/4 cup of your chocolate chips in a small bowl set aside. Pour the heavy cream into a small saucepan. Bring that to a simmer, not a boil, just a simmer. Put it on low. And that's the one hard thing about ganache. Ganache can be very temperamental.
There we go. Okay.
So just simmer your heavy cream, turn off the heat, pour the cream over the chocolate chips, let it stand for just a few minutes, let those chocolate chips melt, and the ganache will, then when you start stirring it, that'll all become real nice and smooth. The chocolate chips will completely melt.
Okay.
Pour the ganache over the cooled bread and enjoy.
Mm, all
so,
right.
Really so, good.
Chocolate bread.
Yes.
If you haven't had enough chocolate from Halloween.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you've got
Make some chocolate bread.
Chocolate bread.
You know what else? This would be good at Christmas time. Crush up some peppermint candy canes and kind of put that on top of the ganache.
Oh, okay.
And there make it look pretty for Christmas and have a little bit of a peppermint kick.
A little
to
it. Sweet treat for for Christmas.
Yes.
You might have to keep that in mind and bring that back out here in a month or so. The Cheddar Bay Biscuit Chicken Pot Pie, the fall fruit salad, and the chocolate bread recipes are all posted at the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. If you don't follow the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, we also have it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Do follow the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page for all of the recipes that we feature each week and lots of other fun stuff as well. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, Christmas bells will soon be ringing. The Salvation Army is gearing up for their annual Red Kettle campaign and looking for volunteers. We'll have details. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.